Welcome to the reading of Quad City Times for January 16th.
17th,
excuse me. This is Wednesday. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of people with print disabilities. Your readers today are Patty Daniels and Pam Rhodes. Here's our first story. This is the front page.
In Scott County, Haley defeats DeSantis for second in the county. Scott County's caucus results largely mirrored the rest of the state, with supporters of former President Donald Trump turning out despite the cold and support for other candidates split. Trump won all but five precincts in the county, performing especially well in rural western Scott County, although statewide, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis got second by slim margin over former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley. She gathered more support than DeSantis in Scott County. Scott County top four results. Donald Trump, 2,857 votes, 49.19%. Statewide, 51%. Nikki Haley, 1,411 votes, 24.29%. Statewide, 19.1%. Ron DeSantis, 1,064 votes, 18.3%, statewide, 21.2%. Vivek Ramaswamy, 446, 7.8%, statewide, 7.7%. In Buffalo Township, for example, along the Mississippi River, 116 caucus goers picked Trump, or 64% of the precinct. It was the precinct in Scott County where Trump picked up the largest number of votes. Becky Tock caucused for the first time Monday in the frigid Walcott Gymnasium for Trump, whom she said she backs all the way. "There are just so many things that need to be changed," she said, "and unless we come out here, it's not going to change." In more urban areas, such as Bettendorf, Trump still won most of the precincts, but by a slimmer margin. In B42, in the northwestern corner of Bettendorf, 103 caucus goers selected Trump as their nominee, or about 37% of the precinct. Haley was 10 votes behind Trump at 93, and DeSantis had 54 votes in that precinct. Haley won in five precincts in Bettendorf and Davenport by a slim margin over Trump. At B52, Bettendorf's northeastern corner, Haley garnered 75 votes, or 37% of the precinct, edging out Trump by just three votes. Her largest margin was in B43, also toward the northeastern part of Bettendorf, where she received 46% of the vote, of the 80 votes cast. Haley got the second most votes in Scott County overall, and in 38 of the 66 individual precincts. She tied for second in four others. During the campaign, Haley catered to more moderate voters who were not sold on further right rhetoric of Trump and DeSantis. She did better on caucus night in areas of Iowa with more college graduates and higher incomes, according to an analysis by the New York Times. She won Johnson County by one vote, the only county Trump didn't win, and got second in Lynn, Black Hawk, and Story counties, in addition to Scott County. DeSantis gathered more support than Haley in other populous counties, Polk, Dubuque, and Woodbury counties. Turnout, according to the state's website Tuesday, was a little more than 110,000 people. More than 186,000 Iowa Republicans cast ballots in 2016, a record year. In 2012, about 122,000 Republicans turned out, with a similar number in 2008 of about 120,000 caucus goers. In Scott County, the trend was similar. About 5,800 Republicans caucused Monday night, fewer than 2016, 9,700, and slightly less than 2012, 5,900, but slightly more than 2008, 5,600. In 2016, Scott County went for Marco Rubio, 26.2%, with Donald Trump and Ted Cruz not far behind with 25.3% and 24.6% respectively. Cruz won statewide that year, beating Trump by 3 percentage points. Rubio won in populist counties, Polk, Dallas, and Johnson, in addition to Scott. Trump went on to win the party's nomination. In 2012, Mitt Romney won Scott County and was within a percentage point of winning statewide. 2 weeks after the caucus day, the party declared Rick Santorum the victor by 34 votes. In 2008, Scott County went for Romney, but statewide, Mike Huckabee won with 34.4% of the vote. In 2000, George W. Bush won Scott County and statewide.
Kaufman criticizes fast projection of caucus win, written for us by Aaron Murphy of the Gazette Lee Des Moines Register. Des Moines, many Iowa Republicans had not yet cast their choice for president, State Party Chairman Jeff Kaufman said, when outside those schools and churches that were hosting the state's first-in-the-nation presidential precinct caucuses, a slew of national media organizations had already declared Donald Trump the winner. Kaufman and at least one of the other presidential campaigns took exception with the early declaration of Trump's victory. The Associated Press, Fox News, CNN, CBS News, and NBC News all called the caucuses for Trump at around 7:30 p.m. Monday night, just a half hour after the caucuses were scheduled to start. The national news organization's expansive and sophisticated elections reporting operations often enable them to project election winners long before the official results are tallied. Especially, Especially when the outcome is not particularly close, as was the case with Trump's 30-point win in the Iowa Republican caucuses. Nonetheless, that early report rubbed Kaufman the wrong way. The state chairman of the Republican Party of Iowa, which put on Monday night's caucuses on Tuesday morning, issued a statement about the last cause of the Trump victory. In the statement, Kaufman said, just around 300 votes had been officially counted when the news organizations declared Trump the winner. Media outlets calling the results of the 2024 first-in-the-nation caucus less than half hour after precinct caucuses had been called to order, before the overwhelming majority of Iowans had even cast their ballots, was highly disappointing and concerning, Kaufman said. A spokesman for the campaign of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who finished a distant second to Trump in the caucuses, equated the early projections of Trump's victory to election interference. It is absolutely outrageous that the media would participate in election interference by calling the race before tens of thousands of Iowans even had a chance to vote, DeSantis campaign communications director Andrew Romeo said. The media is in the tank for Trump, and this is the most egregious example yet. Trump made history with his victory Monday night. He became the first non-incumbent presidential candidate to surpass 50% in an Iowa Republican caucus, and his 30-point victory margin was easily the largest ever by a non-incumbent in the Republican caucuses. National news organizations were able to determine quickly that Trump would be the winner by analyzing data from interviews with Iowa Republicans on their way into the caucuses. Those entrance polls were conducted by the news organizations themselves and by Edison Research, whose national election pool is used by multiple national news organizations. Many of the news organizations, including the AP, CNN, Fox News, and NBC News, reported on or explained on air Monday night how their organization came to determine so quickly that Trump would win the caucuses. The Associated Press declared the former president the winner based on an analysis of initial returns, as well as results of the AP vote cast, a survey of voters who plan to caucus on Monday night. Both showed Trump with an insurmountable lead, the Associated Press reported. Initial results from eight counties showed Trump with far more than half of the total votes counted as of 7:31 p.m. local time, significantly ahead of the rest of the field. These counties included rural areas that are demographically and politically similar to the large number of counties that had yet to report. In order to avoid disrupting voters' participation in an election, news organizations will not project an election's winner until after the polls close. That is, they will not declare a winner until voters can no longer cast a ballot. Caucuses do not have a hard time for the presidential preference section. The Iowa Republican caucuses began at 7 p.m. Monday. But when the presidential straw polls occurred, depending on each of the 1,657 precincts' order of business, Kaufman said the early calls of Trump's victory interfere with the caucuses because, unlike an election at a caucus, participants hear from speakers and could be swayed to change their mind before making their choices. Spokespeople for multiple national organizations who made the early call for Trump said they were told by the state party that voting would take place by 7:20 p.m. local time, 10 minutes before the networks called Trump the winner. NBC News' Chuck Todd said the same on the air on Monday night. And what the state party told us is that doors open at 7 and the voting begins at about 7:20. So look, there was some folks that thought, okay, we'll call it at 7:20. I was like, no, you should give people time as the voting begins. Then that means you're going to have that conversation, Todd said, according to a transcript of his remarks provided by NBC. So we decided not to even look at calling the race until at least the bottom of the hour, because according to the state party, voting should have already begun, because we were mindful of this.
Turning to the local stories of the Quad City Times, here's an article about Rock Island County. Man pleads guilty in sex abuse case. A man accused of sexually abusing a minor in Rock Island County has taken a plea agreement. He still has a pending charge of impersonating a public official in Scott County. The Rock Island County State Attorney's Office charged Kevin R. Blackwell, 21, of Davenport, with a single count of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, according to the county court records. Underlying the charge is the allegation that Blackwell committed a sexual act with a minor between March 19th and May 12th of 2023 and was at least 5 years older than the child, court records state. Where investigators think the incident occurred was not immediately available. On January 5th, Blackwell pleaded guilty to the charge as part of the agreement with prosecutors, court records state. Blackwell waived a pre-sentence investigation and a mitigation hearing, and the court proceeded to sentencing. The sentence was 24 months of probation and 180 days in the Rock Island County Jail with credit for time served already in relation to the case, court records state. He had already been in custody for 232 days. The Scott County charge stems from Blackwell's alleged actions at about 12:30 a.m. on February 12, 2023, according to court records. Scott County records state Blackwell is from Rock Island. The investigation began when the Davenport Police Department received reports of a white Chevrolet Malibu flashing red and blue lights, leading people to think he was a police vehicle. Officers investigating a report of a suspicious vehicle saw a white Chevrolet Malibu at the intersection of Brady Street and Central Park Avenue. It had red and blue lights activated. The police stopped it at Brady and 53rd Streets, and Blackwell allowed them to search the car, court records state. When they did, the officers found red and blue strobing lights connected to the car's auxiliary power. The Scott County Jail website states Blackwell posted his $2,000 cash bond and was free as of Tuesday. His next court appearance on the Scott County charge was scheduled for Wednesday, court records state.
Two dead after Davenport house fire. Written for us by Thomas Geyer of the QC Times. Two people were found dead after a fire at a Davenport residence early Tuesday, police said. Police are calling the deaths and the fire suspicious. The fire occurred around 3:55 a.m. in the 5200 block of North Division Street, a two-family, one-story conversion built in 1979, according to the Scott County Assessor's website. According to a news release from Davenport Police, firefighters arrived on the scene to find moderate smoke coming from one of the units. The fire was quickly extinguished. When firefighters searched the residence, they located two people who were deceased. The names and ages of the deceased were not released as of 7 p.m. Tuesday. The incident is under investigation by the Davenport Police Department. Police ask anyone with information about this incident to call the Davenport Police Department at 563-326-6125, Crime Stoppers at the Quad Cities at 309-762-9500, or submit an anonymous tip via the P3 Tips mobile app, or submit a tip online at QCCrimeStoppers.com. And tax break proposal unveiled. Bipartisan deal would enhance child credit, give business rebates. Written for us by Kevin Freaking of the Associated Press. Washington. The chairman of the top tax policy committees in Congress announced a bipartisan agreement Tuesday to enhance the child tax credit and revive a variety of tax breaks for businesses, a combination designed to attract support from lawmakers of both political parties. The roughly $78 billion in tax cuts would be offset by more quickly ending a tax break Congress approved during the COVID-19 pandemic that encouraged businesses to keep employees on their payroll. The agreement was announced by Senator Ron Wyden, the Democratic chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and Representative Jason Smith, the Republican chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. The lawmakers have been negotiating for months on a tax package that would address an array of priorities before lawmakers turned their focus to election season. Wyden said his goal is to gain approval of the measure in time for businesses and families to benefit during the upcoming filing season. The Internal Revenue Service will begin accepting and processing tax returns January 29th. Lawmakers are already racing to finish their spending bills and are considering a bill focused on aid to Israel and Ukraine and stemming the flow of migrants entering the country at the U.S.-Mexican border. In forging the agreement, Democratic negotiators focused on boosting the child tax credit. The tax credit is a $2,000 per child, but only $1,600 is refundable, which makes it available to parents who owe little to nothing in federal income taxes. The bill would incrementally increase the maximum refundable credit, a child tax credit, to $1,800 for 2023 tax returns, to $1,900 for the following year, and $2,000 for 2025 tax returns. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a liberal think tank with advocacy group, projected about 16 million children in low-income families would benefit from the child tax credit expansion.
Here are a series of very short articles under the heading Digest. Trump in court for defamation case. New York. Donald Trump shook his head in disgust Tuesday as the judge in his New York defamation trial told prospective jurors that another jury had already decided that the former president sexually abused columnist E. Jean Carroll in the 1990s. Fresh from a political win Monday in the Iowa caucuses, the Republican president frontrunner detoured to a Manhattan courtroom for what amounts to the penalty phase of a civil defamation lawsuit stemming from Carroll's claim he sexually attacked her in a department store dressing room. Nightclub shooter faces new federal charges. Denver. The shooter who killed five people and endangered the lives of over 40 others at an LGBTQ+ nightclub in Colorado Springs plans to plead guilty to the new federal charges for hate crimes and firearm violations under an agreement that would allow the defendant to avoid the death penalty, according to court documents made public Tuesday. Anderson Aldrich, 23, made a deal with prosecutors to plead guilty to 50 hate crime charges and 24 firearm violations, the documents show. Aldridge would get multiple life sentences in addition to a 190-year sentence under the plea agreement, which needs a judge's approval. Aldridge was sentenced to life in prison last June after pleading guilty to state charges of murdering and 46 counts of attempted murder, one for each person at the Club Q during the attack on November 19, 2022. Briefly, Gilgo Beach. Rex Huerman, the New York architect charged in a string of slayings known as the Gilgo Beach killings, was formally charged Tuesday in the death of a fourth woman, Maureen Brainerd Barnes, who vanished in 2007. Huerman's attorney entered a not guilty plea. Hunter Biden. House Republicans halted plans to hold Hunter Biden in contempt of Congress this week for defying a congressional subpoena, citing negotiations with his attorney that could end the standoff over his testimony. Federal Reserve. Christopher Waller, an influential member of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, said Tuesday he is increasingly confident that the inflation will continue falling this year back to the Fed's 2% target level after 2 years of accelerating price spikes. Airline merger. A federal judge sided with the Biden administration Tuesday and blocked JetBlue Airways from buying Spirit Airlines, saying the $3.8 billion deal would reduce competition. JetBlue said it was considering whether to appeal. Debate canceled. ABC News on Tuesday canceled the next Republican presidential debate after Nikki Haley said she wouldn't participate unless former President Donald Trump takes part in it, leaving Governor Ron DeSantis as the only candidate committed to Thursday's event in New Hampshire. And finally, Davos Forum. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky came out swinging Tuesday against Russian leader Vladimir Putin at the World Economic Forum's annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland, urging political and business leaders facing war fatigue in the West to help rebuild his country and advance the peace process. And these articles come from the Associated Press.
East Moline, we're doing the obituaries now. Richard Dick DeMay, January 20, 1941 to January 13. Richard Dick DeMay, 82, of East Moline, formerly of Annawan, passed away on Saturday, January 13th at Illini Restorative Care, Silvis, Illinois. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 19th at St. Anthony Catholic Church, Atkinson. Reverend Stephen S. Engelbrecht will officiate. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. on Friday, January 19th at Vandemore Funeral Homes and Crematory in Atkinson. Memorials may be directed to Annawan Alba Fire and Rescue Squad, St. Anthony Church, or East End Boulders Club. Richard was born January 20, 1941, in Annawan to John and Irene Searins DeMay. He graduated from Annawan High School and participated in all sports but excelled at baseball. He attended Greer Technical Institute and operated heavy equipment building roads, but finally settled on a steadier job at International Harvester in East Moline, where he was employed for 20 years. He finished his career with John Deere and Uniparts Olson in Eldridge. Dick liked to work and keep busy. He raised hogs on the family farm and had many experiences with his brothers, Ron, Dave, and Dale. While working, he served in the National Guard, Kewanee, for 5 years. Dick married Colleen Hayes in 1962 at St. Mary's Church in Hoopole. He became a hunting enthusiast in midlife, hunting fowl, elk, and especially deer. He joined the GTFO Club in Victoria, Illinois, and hunted and cared for the property as an unofficial caretaker, which gave him joy. He enjoyed roll bowl and lived a full active life with friends, but especially with family. Those left to cherish his memory include his wife, Colleen DeMay, son, Quinlan DeMay, and grandchildren. Richard was preceded in death by his parents, John and Irene DeMay, and sister-in-law, Dorothy DeMay. Davenport, Hope Schroeder. Hope Schroeder, 69, of Davenport, passed away Friday, January 12th at Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House in Bettendorf. A memorial visitation will be Thursday, January 18th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Runge Mortuary. Interment will be in the National Cemetery, Rock Island, Illinois, at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Hope's name to the Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House. Online condolences may be left at rungemortuary.com. Hope was born January 20th, 1954, in Davenport. She married Russell Schroeder in January 1992 in Davenport. Hope worked for the North Scott Community School District as a bus driver for over 20 years. Hope was a member of the Mississippi Valley Quilters Guild, serving on several board committees, and earned the Guild's Volunteer of the Year Award. She enjoyed volunteering for several local organizations, including the Davenport Police Department, MPS, VIPs, the Community of Hope Food Pantry, and the North Scott Community School District. Those left to honor her memory include her son Andrew, her siblings Mary Muman, Beverly Cole, Michael Sleeper, and Sharon Mill, stepdaughters Jen Oland, Angie Schroeder, Rebecca, and Renee Swartz, and several grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her husband, her parents, and her siblings, Betty Bachman and Clifford L. Bud Sleeper. Hope's family would like to thank the staff at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics and Clarissa C. Cook Hospice House of Bettendorf for the loving care shown to her and her family.
Davenport, Corey Richard Ziolowski, 52, of Davenport, passed away Sunday, January 14th, in Davenport. A celebration of his life will be Saturday, January 20th at 4 p.m. at Coram Deo Bible Church in Davenport. Visitation will be Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. at the church. Memorials may go to the church or Gildas Club. Online condolences may be left at www.rungemortuary.com. Davenport, Delmar Dean Smith. Memorial services for Delmar Dean Smith, 86, of Davenport, will be 11 a.m. Saturday, January 27, at Chambers Funeral Home, Eldridge. Family will greet friends on Saturday from 9 a.m. to service time at the funeral home. Del passed away on Saturday, December 30th, at Trinity Unity Point, Bettendorf, Iowa. Memorials may be directed to the Nature Conservancy. Online condolences may be shared with the family at www.mcginnischambers.com. K. Caleb Zachary Hardy, 25, of Davenport, passed away on Sunday, December 24, at Genesis Medical Center, East Campus, Davenport. Services for Mr. Hardy will be 2 p.m. Sunday, January 21st, at Olivet Baptist Church, Rock Island. Visitation will be Saturday, January 20th, from 4 to 6 p.m. at Whelan Presley Funeral Home and Crematory in Rock Island. Private burial will be in Pine Hill Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Caleb's family. Other condolences may be left for the family at WhelanPresley.com. Daniel Lee Fox was 70 of Davenport, passed away with his beloved wife Tina Fox by his side after fighting a long battle with cancer. There will be a visitation from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Thursday, January 18th at the Runge Mortuary in Davenport. Services will follow at 12 p.m. in the Runge Chapel. Please join us wearing sports gear to honor Diane's love of sports. Condolences may be shared with www.rungamori.com. Richard Dick Marvin Hine, 83, formerly of Bennett, entered eternity on Friday, January 12th, resting comfortably in his recliner in Private Hills Assisted Living in Tipton. Funeral services will be held on Friday, January 19, at 10:30 a.m. at Trinity Lutheran Church in Tipton, with Pastor Michelle Knight officiating. Luncheon will immediately follow in the fellowship hall. Then, interment with last rites will conclude at Inland Cemetery in Bennett. Visitation will be held on Thursday, January 18, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Trinity Lutheran Church in Tipton. A memorial fund to Trinity Lutheran Church has been established in Dick's memory. Online condolences may be shared at www.fryfuneralhome.com.
Davenport. Daniel Lee Fox, December 12, 1953 to January 24th. January 14, 2024, Daniel Lee Fox, 70, of Davenport, passed away with his beloved wife, Tina, by his side after fighting a long battle with cancer. There will be a visitation from 11 a.m. till 12 p.m. Thursday, January 18, at the Runge Mortuary, Davenport. Services will follow at 12 p.m. in the Runge Chapel. Please join us wearing sports gear to honor Dan's love of sports. Condolences may be shared at rungemortuary.com. Dan, the eldest of six, was born on December 12, 1953, to John and Phyllis Fox in Clinton. Dan graduated from Central High School in 1972. After high school, he enlisted in the U.S. Army and served his country in the military police until 1979. He went on to work at the Rock Island National Cemetery and retired from there after 30 years. He married Tina Fox on August 6, 1999, in Davenport. If you had the opportunity to know Dan, you would know that he loved rock and roll. If you rode in his car with him, he would be blaring from the speakers and his hands would be tapping to the beat on his steering wheel. If you came by the house, you would find him watching the current football game from his favorite recliner and yelling at the screen. Dan loved all football, but his favorite team was the Bears. If Dan wasn't at football, his favorite team, he was watching baseball, where he would cheer on the Yankees. In his free time, Dan also enjoyed going for drives, camping, and fishing. Dan leaves behind his wife, Tina Fox, the sons, Ben, Tina Fox, Overland Park, Kansas, Philip Rogers in Jacksonville, and Keith Veringen, Milton, brothers Doug and Denny, 7 grandchildren, and his nieces and nephews. Dan was preceded in death by his parents, John and Phyllis Fox, as well as his sisters, Denise White, Diane Fox, and Debbie Sable. Pallbearers are as follows: Ben Fox, Philip Rogers, Keith Yarrington, Landon Gwynn, Robbie Fox, Randy Busselot, Kara Barrington, honorary. Your sarcastic comments and dry humor will forever be missed. Your deep love of your family will be your legacy. Keep causing trouble, Danny, and rest easy. And there will be no more pain and no more sorrow. Revelations 21:4.
Joseph H. Prochaska, age 89, of Long Grove, Iowa, passed away on Sunday, January 14th, at Allure of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. A funeral mass will be held at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, January 20th, at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Long Grove. A visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. prior to mass at the church. Burial will be in St. Anne's Cemetery, Long Grove. Memorial contributions may be made to King's Harvest Pet Rescue in Davenport. Online condolences may be left at the www.bentleyfuneralhome.com. Mike Boyd, 82, of Bettendorf, died peacefully with his family by his side on January 15th. And he will be dearly missed by many. Funeral services and mass of Christian burial for Mike will be celebrated at 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 19, at St. John Vianney Catholic Church. The mass will be live streamed by visiting Mike's obituary at www.hmdfuneralhome.com. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Davenport. Visitation will be Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. at Halligan McCabe DeVries Funeral Home in Davenport. Additional visitation will be held Friday from 9:30 a.m. until the time of the service. In lieu of flowers, memorial may be made to Iowa Quad Cities Rotary, Davenport Challenger, Little League, or Habitat for Humanity. And here is a list of the pending funerals. Ruth E. Orwitz, 88, of Rock Island, passed away Friday, January 12th at Silver Cross Nursing Center, Rock Island. Arrangements pending at Wheeler Pressey Funeral Home and Crematory in Rock Island. Charles Lincoln, 77, of Bettendorf, passed away Sunday, January 7th at home. Arrangements are pending at Wheeler Pressey Funeral Home and Crematory in Rock Island. Kenneth J. Stimson, 99, of Rock Island, Illinois, passed away Saturday, January 13th at Cedarhurst, Moline. Arrangements are pending at Rafferty Funeral Home in Moline. Nancy L. Kaplan, 91, of Anthem, Arizona, formerly of the Quad Cities, passed away Saturday, January 13th at Senior Sanctuary and Anthem, Arizona. Arrangements are pending at Wheeler Pressey Funeral Home and Crematory in Rock Island. John R. Abbott, 77, of Andalusia, Illinois, passed away Friday, January 12th at home. Arrangements are pending at Wheeler Pressey Funeral Home and Crematory in Milan. Richard Dick Marvin Hine, 83, of Tipton, formerly of Bennett, passed away Friday, January 12th at Prairie Hills Assisted Living. Arrangements are pending at Fry Funeral Home in Tipton. Michael D. Pessel, 66, of Wilton, passed away Saturday, January 13th at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Arrangements are pending at Bentley Funeral Home in Wilton. Joseph H. Prochaska, 89, of Long Grove, Iowa, passed away Sunday, January 14th at Allure of the Quad Cities in Moline. Arrangements are pending at Bentley Funeral Home in Durant. John C. Henderson of Moline passed away Sunday, January 14th at Genesis Medical Center in Silvis. Cremation will be directed by Cremation Society of the Quad Cities in Moline. Gary Forrett, 78, of Moline, passed away Friday, January 12th, at home. Arrangements are pending at Trimble Funeral Home and Crematory in Moline. Myra Elizad Moyau, excuse the pronunciation on that, 46, of Bettendorf, passed away Sunday, January 14th, at home. Arrangements are pending at Trimble Funeral Home and Crematory in Moline. Catherine J. Miller, 82, of East Moline, formerly of Apache Junction, Arizona, passed away Thursday, January 11th, at Genesis Medical Center in Illinois, on the Illini campus. Arrangements are pending at Estradol Mortuary and Crematory Limited, Moline. John W. Each, Jr., 93, of Rock Island, passed away Sunday, January 14th, at Unity Point Health, Trinity, Rock Island. Arrangements are pending at Whelan Presley Funeral Home and Crematory in Rock Island. Mark Edward McDermott, 70, of DeWitt, passed away Thursday, January 11th, at home. Arrangements are pending at Schultz Funeral Home in DeWitt. Richard Day Bulkins, 71, of Morrison, Illinois, passed away Saturday, January 13th, at home. Arrangements are pending at Bosma Renke's Funeral Home in Morrison. Luella Brees, 102, of Morrison, Illinois, passed away Wednesday, January 10th, at Rest Haven Home, Morrison. Arrangements are pending at Bosma Renke's Funeral Home in Morrison. Karen K. Meeker, 79, of East Moline, passed away Sunday, January 14th, at Genesis Illini Campus, Silvis, Illinois. Arrangements are pending at Sullivan Ellis Mortuary, Limited, East Moline. Eldon Beers, 94, of Tipton, passed away Saturday, January 13th. Arrangements are pending at Chapman Funeral Home in Clarence, Iowa. Otto Adolf Jasmin, 84, of Clinton, passed away Sunday, January 14th, at Alverno, Clinton. Arrangements are pending at Clinton Chapel, Snell Zoring Funeral Home and Crematory in Clinton. Judy Lynn Glander, 74, of Clinton, passed away Sunday, January 14th, at Alverno, Clinton. Arrangements are pending at the Pape Funeral Home in Clinton. David A. Van Spaybrook, 67, of East Moline, passed away Sunday, January 14th, at UP Trinity, Rock Island, Illinois. Arrangements are pending at Rafferty Funeral Home in Moline. Emma S. Rudrick, 98, of Bettendorf, passed away Monday, January 15th, at home. Arrangements are pending at McGinnis Chambers Funeral Home in Bettendorf. Barbara Jo Truman, 71, of Bettendorf, passed away Friday, January 12, at home. Arrangements are pending at McGinnis Chambers Funeral Home in Bettendorf. Stephen C. Hirschman, 74, of Andover, Illinois, passed away Monday, January 15th, at home. Arrangements are pending at Stackhouse Moore Funeral and Cremation Services in Cambridge. John R. Oakey, 74, of Moline, passed away Monday, January 15th, at home. Cremation will be directed by the Cremation Society of the Quad Cities in Moline. And finally, Michael E. Havenhill, 68, of Davenport, passed away Saturday, January 13th, at home. Arrangements are pending at McGinnis Chambers Funeral Home in Bettendorf.
John T. Honschel, July 5, 1935. Memorial services for John T. Honschel, 88, of Davenport, will be at noon on Monday, January 22nd, at the Van Ho Funeral Home, East Moline, Illinois. Visitation will be 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Monday at the funeral home. A luncheon will follow. Entombment will be at Oakdale Cemetery, Davenport, at a later date. Mr. Honschel passed away Wednesday on January 10th at the Davenport Lutheran Home. John was born July 5, 1935, in Santa Barbara, California, the son of David T. and Jesse V. Gomhonshaw. His childhood included growing up in the British Isles and Casper, Wyoming, after graduating with a BA in Industrial Engineering from Montana State College, he became an ammunition quality assurance specialist. He wore his collection of Mickey Mouse ties with pride until he retired from the Rock Island Arsenal in 1992 after 30 years of service. John met Deanna Zimmerman on a blind date in Billings, Montana. They married in a small church in Reno, Nevada on September 3, 1967. His next work assignment sent him to Great Britain, where the couple returned home their favorite souvenir, Kathy. Returning to the States, the couple lived in Oregon until they moved to Iowa with their new daughter, Elizabeth. John kept busy volunteering and with hobbies, amateur radio, civil air patrol, having coffee around town, tinkering in his garage, and his 46 Mercury. Survivors include his wife, Deanna, daughters, grandchildren. A special thanks to Lori Rowe for all of her care. John enjoyed the company of many fur friends. In lieu of flowers and gifts, donate to your favorite animal charity. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.vanho.com. Bettendorf, Delmar Dell Hintz, April 14, 1928 to January 10th. Delmar L. Dell Hintz, 95, of Bettendorf, passed away on Wednesday, January 10th, at his daughter's home in Port Byron, Illinois. Services will be private. Interment will be in Davenport Memorial Park Cemetery. Gibson booked the arrangements. Delmar was born April 14, 1928, in Stockton, to Herbert and Hazel Timpson Hintz. He married the love of his life, Angela Geary Hintz, on October 11, 1952, at the Harrison Gospel Chapel, Davenport. He was employed by various plastering drywall contractors for 43 years, retiring from Allied Construction in 1991. Dell was a 75-year member of the Laborers International Union, Local 309. He served in the National Guard in the 1950s, attaining the rank of Sergeant First Class. Dell inspired those who loved him through a lifetime of character, integrity, devotion to the family, and strong work ethic. He loved bowling, playing cards, and a good game of marbles. Delmar is survived by his daughters, Lanice, Lisa, Lon, and grandchildren, Megan Mitros, Lauren Caleb, Ananda Botasek, Hudson Hintz, and others. Jacob Weddington, and five great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, his wife Angie, brothers Melvin and Jackie, and sisters Lois, Lorraine, and Janice. Share a memory or condolence at www.gibsonboatfh.com. And Judy L. Glander, December 4, 1949 to January 24th. Judy Lynn Glander, age 74, of Clinton, passed away Sunday at the Alverno. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, January 19th, at the Pape Funeral Home. Following the visitation, cremation rites will be accorded. Burial will take place at a later date in Clinton Lawn Cemetery. Judy was born in Clinton on December 4, 1949, the daughter of Bernard and Hazel Knudsen. She graduated from Clinton High School in 1965 and received an AA degree from Clinton Community College in 1970. Judy has served as manager of Waldorf Credit Union and later with Dairy Pack, Rock 10, Eagle Rock Credit Unions. She had also spent time with Health Services Credit Union. She married Terry Glander on April 1, 1977 in Clinton. She had been a member of Zion Lutheran Church. Judy was a member of the board of directors with the Clinton Baseball Club and had worked in the office with general manager Fritz Kolschen. Judy was an avid bowler, bowling Monday and Friday nights at the Recreation Lanes. She served as the secretary of Clinton Junior Bowling and of the Clinton Women's Bowling Association. She was an Iowa Hawkeye and Chicago Cubs fan. Judy's survived by her husband, Terry, a daughter, Lisa Wilson of Cedar Rapids, and granddaughter, Elsie Mason of Belle Plaine, Iowa. She was preceded in death by her parents. Online condolences may be left at www.papeth.com.
Mike Boyd, 82, of Bettendorf, died peacefully with his family by his side on January 15th, and he will be dearly missed by many. Funeral services and massive Christian burial for Mike will be celebrated at 10:30 a.m. Friday, January 19, at John Vianney Catholic Church. The Mass will be live-streamed by visiting Mike's obituary at www.hmdfuneralhome.com. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Davenport. Visitation will be Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Helgen McCabe DeVries Funeral Home in Davenport. Additional visitation will be held Friday from 9:30 a.m. until the time of service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Quad Cities, Rotary Davenport, Challenger, Little League, or Habitat for Humanity. Turning now to the opinion section of the Quad City Times, here is a letter to the editor from Mary Tomasz from Long Grove. Biden believes in Constitution rule of law. President Biden's driving force from day one has been to save our democracy. His belief in the Constitution and the rule of law, his empathy, his courage, trip to Kiev, his belief that Americans working together can do anything, is the antithesis of his opponents. His administration restored a functioning government by filling hollowed-out governmental office with the best and the brightest. He appointed and the Senate confirmed outstanding cabinet members. He got us through COVID and sputtering COVID economy, which has morphed into the best in the world with full employment. Private investment is strong, inflation is starting to go down, and the stock market is on an upward trajectory. With bipartisan support, the president has gotten bills passed to make insulin affordable for Medicare recipients and long-neglected construction of roads, bridges, and grid. Also, bills addressing climate change and gun control. His first bill to Congress was for immigration reform, but this has always been a stickler for Congress. He supported unions in their strikes for higher wages. Internationally, President Biden is a trusted statesman. He strengthened NATO, and together we have helped the Ukrainians fight Russia's invasion while also working in the Middle East to prevent World War III. He has strengthened his ties with nations in the Pacific and opened communication channels with China. Once again, that letter was by Mary Tomasz. I don't really know how to pronounce her last name. It's spelled T-O-M-S-C-H-E, and this person is from Long Grove.
Another short editorial letter to the editor. Unhappy with abbreviation of agriculture, written for us by Ken Kaczmarek of Parkview. On the front page of a recent issue, Thursday, January 11th, page 1, the following article title exists: Where Do Republican Hopefuls Stand on Ag? In that title, just exactly what do you mean by ag? Without reading the article, being This is Iowa, agriculture is the best bet. However, article titles should be clear enough for the average reader, not just farmers. Alternatively, ag could mean attorney general, but such a reference would likely be capital A-G. Normally, such a reference would be spelled out fully. I would offer this alternative. Where do Iowa GOP hopefuls stand on agriculture? Think about it. Again, this was written for us by Ken Kaczmarek of Parkview. And examine our causes of explosive anger. Rather than focus on the politician's comments regarding the Perry, Iowa tragedy or arguing over what was the original purpose and intent of the Second Amendment, I suggest we citizens of a divided nation examine the causes of our explosive anger and violent tendencies. Appearances are that many Americans are deficient when it comes to managing anger in healthy ways. Whatever the cause of the tragedy in Perry was, we'll go to the grave with the assailant, yet one must ask, was the cause worth the life of a sixth grader? This is written again for us by Jamie Delavere of Rock Island. And that brings us to the end of the Quad City Times for today. I'm Patty Daniels, and my partner at the microphone has been Pam Rhodes. You can listen to IRIS programs on any computer or smart device at any time at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening to IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.